welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And today I have a longtime hero from afar, a treat for me, Mr. Carl Richards. Carl, you are a certified financial planner and creator of the Sketch Guy column, appearing weekly in the New York Times since 2010. You've also been featured on Marketplace Money, Oprah.com, and Forbes.com. In addition, you've become a frequent keynote speaker at financial planning conferences and visual learning events around the world. Through your simple sketches, you make complex financial concepts easy to understand. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Dominique. It's really good to chat with you.
Yeah. I'm happy to dig into this topic of crafting financial advice for the next generation financial professional. I think there's a lot of overlap on our platforms, but I have to say this, and please don't take this the wrong way, but I'm looking at your Society of Advice YouTube channel, and I'm like, okay, Cerulean Associates say there's 400,000 people using the term, you know, financial advisor as their job description, and there's just 90,000 CFPs. I'm like, we need to get more views on this channel, period.
I know. It's funny. We haven't really told anybody about that. That's the dilemma. We need to be better about telling people about that. That's been a really fun project for sure.
It's great stuff, man. I've really enjoyed that. I catch those like in between lunch breaks and stuff. And it's a really good insights that I think really set up this conversation pretty well. And so I just want to have a conversation really around this notion that you've been creating for some time around what is a real financial advisor? And I use that term in air quotes because of all the things that you've talked about.
Yeah, no, me too. And it's funny, like it seems to start with the idea that we don't even know what to call ourselves. And my CMO, chief marketing officer, and my COO, like they're both like, how come you guys don't even know what to call each other? So we started just using the term financial professional because we didn't know what to call it. If we don't know what to call ourselves, we don't know. Financial advisors, financial planners are not very good at talking about what they do. So we don't know what to call ourselves. We don't know what to talk about what we do. And if it's hard for us, imagine how hard it is for the people out there. So that's been, I think that's where we have to start.
I'm curious though, like, so, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think we're about, let's call it 50, 60 years old as an industry, maybe give or take a little bit. I'm 45. And so why has this taken so long just on under vernacular and nomenclature? I mean, like no other real profession has this problem.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I think part of the dilemma, at least early on, there's an old guard of financial planners that have been around a long time, but it's a small group. I used to call it the secret society of real financial planners, right? Like nobody knew that they existed. I remember when I first stumbled into that group, you know, the group that used to go to FPA retreat, and there was even a secret group called Nasruddin, which I'm not even supposed to say out loud. Like there's, when I stumbled into them, I'm like, where, what, who, I did. So I think largely most of us have been coming from, like I came up through the brokerage industry. Other people come up through the insurance industry. Some people come up through banking, some through sales, some through accounting. So it was like this, and then we all have sort of converged, not all of us, but I think many of us are converging on this central place where we realize like looking at one little slice of somebody's life is not delivering the outcome we hope to deliver to the client. It's not a good relationship for the client. It's not a good relationship for me. If I'm just selling life insurance, for instance, that the impact of life insurance clearly has something to do with the spending plan and the investment portfolio and the how we deal with taxes. So we all came up through these different places and now we're all saying, I want to be the holistic financial advisor, the trusted, like those words make their rounds through the industry, the trusted advisor, the financial quarterback, the financial coach. And so now we're starting to say like, what does it mean? And I noticed this, I mean, now it's like, it's at least 10 years ago. I was at FPA retreat on a panel with Kitsis and Tim Maurer. And I said the words like, Nobody knows that we exist. Like, nobody knows that the people in this audience exist. It's like, and I said it for the first time, it's like there's a secret society of real financial planners. And it's taken us 10 or 15 years now to be having this discussion at a level where maybe it's time that it won't be so secret anymore. So I think that's part of the challenge is we've got to put a stake in the ground and say, this is what it means to give real advice. And of course, we've got big organizations and I'm thrilled for them and I'm glad they're doing it. I'm not interested in it, but there's big organizations fighting the regulatory fight and I'm like, please go fight that fight. But in the meantime, people like you and I are saying, hey, one by one by one, let's change the industry. While the big fight's going on, let's change the industry on an individual level.
No, I think I love that. I think I want to hop down a couple of those rabbit trails because I know, you know, the CFP board's done a bang up job, I believe. Obviously, FPA's out there, NAPFA's out there. But I think just for the sake of the audience, because one day, I hope, not only people inside this industry, let's call them practitioners, will use this information, but also consumers of financial services will use this information, right? So I wonder what your definition of financial advice is.
Yeah, it's funny. We worked really hard on this. So I wrote that column every week for 10 years with the New York Times, and my editor, at least once a year, we would say like, gosh, we should write something about how to hire a financial advisor. And we would go down like the checklist style, like, okay, they have this and they work at this place and this is how they get paid and they're regulated this way and this is what it means. And then typically before we published that piece, there would be a story about somebody who met all those checklist items stealing money from little old ladies or something. And so we're like, geez, we just throw our hands in the air. So I started talking more about like what it feels like and how they behave. Forget what they call themselves. These are the sort of columns I was writing. Like, forget what they call themselves. Because I agree. I think there will be a day when the public, and it's happening now, where the public will say, it's a little bit like Intel, the old Intel Inside campaign. And probably most people listening to this won't remember that. You probably do. But there was a time when Intel makes computer chips. They didn't make computers. They started a campaign to the public so that when you walked into Radio Shack back in the day, you would say, I want a computer with an Intel chip in it. You wouldn't say, I wanted an IBM or I wanted a Dell. You'd say, does it have an Intel chip? I think that's my favorite analogy to what I think starting to happen is that the public is going and saying, I want an advisor that acts like this. Like, they may use a word like fiduciary, or maybe they say, I want a CFP, or maybe they say, I want an advisor that's fee only. Like, they're starting to catch these words. And I think we're getting closer and closer to the idea of like the public will know what it feels like. And so my definition of real financial advice is really the process, the ongoing process of aligning your use of capital. Whenever I say those words whenever I say the word capital, I think asterisk. Money, time, energy, and attention. So aligning your use of capital with what is important to you. That's to me what it means real advice. So that would filter down through all, like that's the foundation that the spending plan, budgeting, or the insurance is like, what's first, we got to get some sense of what's important to you. And then we got to figure out how to slowly over time align your use of capital with that. And that's a never-ending process. It's because what's important to you is going to change. And then the assumptions about how you use your capital are going to be wrong. Like inflation will be a little different or whatever, right? So it's this never-ending process of being a guide in a changing landscape and not a defender of an outdated map called a plan. And then my last definition of real advice is real advisor or real planner is somebody I'd send my mom to. So, you know, like it's squishy, like we can't, unfortunately, we can't say, I wish we could say, and I think we're getting close, go hire a CFP, right? I wish we could say, go hire somebody who's regulated as a fiduciary and charges, you know, in a transparent way. Like, I wish we could say that, and we're getting close. And I think of those things as pointers, like, you know, good first steps. And then it's about the relationship. And does this person actually do the thing that we want, right? Align our use of capital with what we say is important to us.
I think it's okay for it to be squishy relative to how old our industry is and the evolution it's gone through, right? It's almost like, you know, Carl Richards' definition of a financial advisor. You know, you got like three entries, just like Webster's has, you know, like three different variations of the word. You know, so I like the last one, like somebody I would send my mom to, right? So like that was my
initial definition when I started talking about the society.
Yeah.
People would be like, how do I join? And I'd be like, look, you can't join, but if you're somebody I'd send my mom to, you're already a member. Like that was my initial definition like 10 years ago. So
yeah.
We're already making progress, right? And I think the work that the CFP board's doing, the work that, you know, all the individual FPA and NAPFA are doing, like all of this together is starting to make a difference, I think.
No, I would agree. I think I've struggled with this myself, just transparently. There's a scripture in the Bible that says where your treasure is, your heart will be also. So I started with this whole idea of overlapping your capital, ironically enough, with what you value, because I've talked with, you know, decamillionaires and these people, and usually the people that have the most fulfillment, regardless of what their balance sheet states, is someone that's actually using their capital, their time and their energy to go after the things that really, really mean something to them. I had this one client whose wife died of cancer. And well into his 70s, he commuted an hour each way to volunteer at the clinic where she passed. And he got so much fulfillment out of that. And like, I remember asking him one time, I was like, "What, dude, like, tell me what's the secret to your jovialness at this age? And what do you do?" And he told me that. And I was like, wow, that's powerful, because I my own acronym for financial advice is, It's got to be relatable. You've got to be empathetic. You've got to be attentive, and you've got to be listening, because there's just so many things that are captured in the relationship with money, with people. And I wonder what your thoughts are with some of the practice that you've gone through with really unpacking some of these things, these deeper issues that lie well beneath just the financial plan, like you said.
Yeah, it's funny because I don't know how you do it any other way. And like that, like there, this comes up all the time, especially among maybe more traditional, like big firms or like the training, like, hey, I'm not here for somebody to cry on my couch, or, you know, I'm not a marriage counselor, or I'm not, like, people throw that sort of stuff around. And I'm not saying that either, but what I am saying is, how do you possibly, let me give you an example. We had this client come in, this is in the book, in the one page financial plan, this is the story in the book, that I can't remember what I changed their names in the book, but let's just go with Julie and Steve come in. It was when I worked at a big brokerage firm that was really well known for investments, so they had that look on their face, like, what have you got for me, kid? I want the best performing investments. And we had this discussion where I asked them a question to try and uncover a sense of purpose, is what I think of it as. We call that early document the top of a one-page financial plan. There's just a sentence or two called a statement of financial purpose, is what we call it. So I asked Julie, and Julie says, I asked her a version of Bill Bacharach's question. Bill uses the question, what's important about money to you? And Bill's been doing it forever, so he's probably right. But I love changing that just a little bit with Simon Sinek's work. I like to ask, why is money important to you? And again, I think Bill's version is probably better, but I like my version better. So I said, why? Julie said, she said, freedom. And it was kind of like, get me out of this question. I came here to talk about performance, freedom. I said, oh, tell me a little bit more. And again, my goal at a first meeting was somebody was going to cry and it wasn't going to be me. Right. So I was like, Julie said freedom. And I said, tell me a little bit more. And she was like, flexibility. And I said, oh, tell me more about flexibility. That could mean different things to different people. Why is flexibility important to you? And I'm shortcutting it, but Julie said, longer pause this time. Things started to settle down a bit, right? Relax, we're not talking about standard deviations or correlate. Like, why is flexibility important to you? And she said, time. Like, I just want a little more time. Julie, I forgot to mention, was a super busy emergency room doctor. Type A personality, driven, competitive, like you have to be an emergency room doctor. She was also the managing partner at the biggest emergency department in the city we lived in. So like she was on. She was like, time, I just like a little more time. And I said, Julie, tell me a little bit more about that. Like, let's pretend like you had all the time in the world. Just pretend for a minute, and we'll define that later and we'll call it a goal. But for a minute, let's just pretend like you have all the time in the world. Why would that be important to you? Longer pause, a little bit of emotion, and Julie, driven ER doctor, 12 minutes into meeting me, says, Carl, I just, you know, at some point I want to have a family, and I haven't even had time to think about it.
Wow.
Right? And yet, you think about that, 12 minutes in, they came in for investment performance, but here's my question. How would I have possibly built Even something as simple as an investment portfolio, how would I have possibly built a financial plan, given them any advice without knowing that? And where exactly did you expect that to come up on your 17 question risk tolerance questionnaire? Right? And so my point is, how are we supposed to do the job that we're claiming we're going to do without having those types of conversations? It feels to me like we are just chucking prescriptions at people. You don't like blue? That's fine, Dominique. I've got red, without ever taking the time to diagnose.
I think you bring up something that I think is really important that I talk to my community about all the time. And I've made this statement before. So I've been married 24 years. I have 3 adult children. And I say, more than CFP, more than my master's in finance, more than blah, 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 all that crap, is I think my years as a husband and a father have made me into a better financial professional, because I've had to work on empathy, self-awareness, all these personal development skills that what I call showing up for the client or the prospective client, just genuinely curious about how I can help them, right? Asking really great questions, like you just said. I wonder if you can double click on that, to steal a little bit from Shane Parrish, on just this ability to show up. Like I know so many of my peers that come to meetings that are, they're not present. So I don't even know if you can be not present asking those type of questions. What are your thoughts around that?
No, I agree. I love a word you just used. I think, look, doing this, giving people space to have a conversation. And I know, look, part of the problem is no one shows up asking for this. No one has ever shown up at my office or any of the financial advisors I know. Nobody's ever said, like, I want to cry on your couch, or could you help me clarify my goals, or could you create space for me to talk? No one, that's not what they want. Sorry, excuse me. That's not what they want. It's not what they think we do. They've been trained by the Financial Pornography Network that what we do is deliver performance and or sell a product like life insurance. And so that's the beginning of the problem, is to just empathize with the idea that no one shows up with that. But it's definitely what they need. It may not be what they think they want, but once they experience it, they'll realize, oh, geez, that's what it is. Sometimes this reminds me a little bit of the Supreme Court's definition of pornography. When they were asked to define pornography, they said, we don't know, but we know it when we see it. And I think that's part of our problem, is we can't explain what we do. We just have to give people the experience. Now, how do you give, to your point, how do you give people the experience? The word you used, which I think is really important. Well, one more little preface before the word you used is, look, this is really, really simple, but not easy. You know, listening is really simple, but not easy. Be like, my advice to advisors, like, be human. Okay, that's really simple, but not easy. And the word you used is curiosity. Just come with a sense of, like, Julie, oh my gosh, that's fascinating. Julie, tell me more about, why is time important to you? Just be curious. Because what's happening, and Russ Allen Prince did a survey years ago in his book, The Private Client Attorney. They interviewed high net worth families that valued and were willing to pay for advice, estate planning advice, had paid for estate planning advice. I can't remember what the number was, but it was substantial. They were high net worth, valued and were willing to pay for advice had paid for an estate plan and then didn't implement it. That was the population they surveyed. The question they asked was, why didn't you implement it? And I can't remember the exact number, but it was 90% plus said it didn't reflect what we wanted. Well, how did that happen? The only way that happened is you were too interested in crafting a monument to yourself than you were in being present and listening to the client. How do we fix that? We're just curious, right? Make them the hero. Ask really good questions and listen. All pretty simple, but not easy stuff.
I think, you know, there's a level of, as you were talking, Carl, I'm just thinking, I'm like, how did I get to that point? And I'll tell you right now, it really wasn't in the conference room sitting across from the client. Now, granted, I've had my hours. I think we all have, but it's really doing the stuff that you can't always put on your resume, where you're having difficult conversations, maybe with coworkers or family members or whatever the deal is. And so I say that to say, those conversations were kind of the precursors to build the confidence to sit in a room with a client or a stranger and say, you know, I'm looking at this right now, but I don't know that it's about the money. Like, unpack that for me, because you say this, you say that, but I'm looking at this and it's a little different. So what do you really want to do? And then, you know, Steve Sims talks about asking the three questions, you know, the three whys. So, you know, you go the layer below, because they're telling you what you want to know on the first why, but you got to get down there to what they really feel or what they really think. So I wonder, though, if this leads to your concept of having compound impact versus compound interest, right? That we got this whole notion around performance and this and that and these bells and whistles, but a lot of the work that we do really gets done with the stuff that is not as noticeable. I wonder if you can speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, first, just let me just comment on what you said. This is a simple, and we take advisors through an exercise, like just develop. So two things. One, you can practice this. And I used to practice all the time. Like my wife used to tell me, she's like, hey, on this business trip, you know, you tend to talk a lot. What if you this time listened more? And I was like, what? That's kind of rude. But then I thought, well, I would. So I'd have this goal. Like, you can here's an exercise you can practice. The next conversation you're in with someone, especially if they're asking you for advice, family member, friend, child, what if instead of giving the advice, you just ask more questions? It's a ninja trick. I used to play it all the time. I was like, I'm going to practice this ninja trick. Because what will happen is you'll say, oh, that's interesting. And I love you used another phrase. I think having these go-to transitions, we call them go deeper statements. You just use a great one. Like, unpack that for me. Like, how good, like, it's so easy to go, oh, Dominique, that's interesting. Will you unpack that for me? Or, Dominique, tell me more. Or, keep going. Or, say more. Like, what if next time somebody asked you for help, you'd have this experience where, and I've had this over and over, where I'm like, I'm going to play the ninja trick today. I'm going to look for a chance to play the ninja trick. Somebody will come and ask me for advice. And right now we're remodeling our kitchen. Like, don't tell my wife this, but my wife has questions for me all the time. She's an interior designer. This morning, she's like, hey, I need your advice on this. What do you think of this bench versus that? And I have learned over 26 years that the best thing I can do is go, oh, I really, tell me what you think. Oh, which part do you like? Oh, I can see you really thought through that. Tell me why you like that versus that. Yeah, and then pretend like I'm considering it, which I actually am, and then say, I love that. Let's go that direction. So you can practice this. So just next time you get in a conversation on a plane, practice. And one of the rules you can play with is anything that comes out of my mouth has to end in a question mark. And then I don't have a preconceived agenda. Based on what they say, I'm going to say something like, whoa. What does that mean? Or unpack that for me, or tell me more. So to me, that's how you get good at it, is you practice, right? And again, simple but not easy.
If you're asking yourself how to decide the best path into financial services, you're not alone. Navigating the ins and outs of the financial services industry can be confusing and downright frustrating. Because just when you think you've got an interesting opportunity, you're getting baited and switched to be a glorified salesperson. Perhaps you'd like to know how to construct your best path into the financial services industry. Enter the Career Changer Blueprint Program. This is a program where I'm going to be exposing career changers just like you to the ins and outs of the financial services industry inside of the Jumpstart community. You'll get to spend time with decision makers in Ask Me Anything sessions. You'll also get to interact with financial planning clients to get additional perspective on how the financial planning process works. You're going to get access to my coaching vault and monthly training calls. All of this inside of a community of supportive, like-minded individuals. To learn more about this opportunity, please visit www.jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Now let's get back to the conversation. But I want to say this real quick, because you keep on bringing this up, and I'm like, I have to say this, because I've said this before, that and I've even said this to, I'm super transparent with my prospective clients, because at this stage in my career, I've been blessed, and I don't have to work with everybody. So that's a blessing, and I realize that. But at the end of the day, I do want to let people know where I'm at. And I go, you know, financial planning, let's just call it financial planning, is very simple. It's not easy. I say it's taking your limited time and money and spreading it across unlimited choices. And so the better you are as a professional in helping people realize, you know, it's not really unlimited choice. It's a facade of unlimited choice because of how bombarded we are in helping them hone in. Almost some of the work that Gay Hendricks has done with like zone of excellence, zone of genius and stuff, like how can they operate in their zone of genius, in their zone of excellence? I kind of look at myself as like, I almost pride myself on helping people get there. I don't care if you even call it financial advisor. It's just like, how can I facilitate you being your best self? And I wonder if we adopted that, like, would we have a better industry?
No, we all come up with these clever little names, you know, financial coach, financial quarterback, financial life planner, whatever. I don't know what the right name to call, but that's what I think it is. Like, I don't think, like, internally, I think we should feel like dream makers, right? I feel like we should feel like permission granters. I feel like we should feel like the greatest artist ever, and the human lives that we work with, those are our canvas. Like, that's how we should feel. How we communicate that, there's a chess match that goes on a little bit. Like, look, I know you didn't come in for this soft stuff. How do I slowly take you where you are and lead you that direction and help you understand the value? Because the guy down the street's going to sell them certainty and performance, and you have to help them I think of it as detox from that whole process. But that's what it is in the end, right? In the end, you're a dream maker. Yeah. In the end, you're helping them realize their best self. In the end, like, I have a buddy who thinks of himself as a venture capitalist, and his 100 clients are all the firms that he's invested in, right? And is like, I don't care how I have another friend who thinks of themselves purely as an artist, and his 97 clients are the canvases he draws on, and he thinks of their clients as the hero of the journey. And he's just the guide, but it's an art. Each client is an art project for him. Mm. Right. But that's the vision.
Yeah.
And again, people walk in the door, they're not asking you to be an artist, right? Like, they're not asking, they're like, what spreadsheet have you got for me, kid? And we've got to take them from there to this vision of where they really, really want to be. And once they get there, they look back on what they thought. I have clients like this. They look back and go, gosh, when I get cold calls now, I'm just like, you don't even know what you're talking about, right? Like, it's not even, the words you're using are not the same thing as my relationship with Dominique, right?
Yeah. It's weird though, because I mean, and you'll have to come back for another podcast on this, I think, because this is a whole nother episode on how you price or market that, because our industry has that totally confused. But I was sitting with a client, that actually found me during the pandemic. So, you know, a lot of people were, you know, I think had a chance to kind of decompress and you know, really think through their life. And the husband, who did not, you know, I won't say he was hesitant, but he was hesitant. And so the relationship was really, and has been, with the wife, but we all had our talk the other day, and he said, you know, I just want to say this before I leave. He had to go do something. He's like, me and my wife were walking today, and he's like, this relationship that we've had with you over these like last 9 months has been really great. I've seen the difference in her, like her level of stress has, has lessened and she's enjoying life more. And that meant a lot to me because that's the reason why you do the work. Like,
no, I get goosebumps hearing stories like that. Because what we don't remember is how lonely, scared, and anxious most. I've been all over the world the last 10 years, so I can say this, but particularly most of us in America are about our financial future. And to have somebody who's serving as a guide, who's helped us uncover that a bit more, where we can finally let go of just at least a little bit of that, ideally all of it, but at least a little bit at a time. And we wake up one day, 9 months later, and we look back, we turn around and look back at how far we've come. The clients do, and they say, oh my gosh, isn't that interesting? I'm not thinking like that anymore. I'm not losing sleep. Like that, the ability we have outside of somebody's health, the ability we have, I don't know that you have a bigger opportunity. So I think it's really true. And yeah, pricing, that's a whole, we price for the commodity, we bill for the commodity and give away the most valuable stuff is how we typically do it in our industry. We got to get that fixed.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. So,
Hey Dom, one more thing though, real quick.
Yeah.
You mentioned pandemic.
Yeah.
Like for the kind of work you do, and the kind of work you're helping other people do, other advisors do, you've been given permission to have this conversation in a way that you could have never had in the last 20 years of your career. This a little bit in 2008, 2009, but just a little bit compared to now, you've been given permission to say something as simple as, in the next client meeting, try this. Hey, over the last 12 to 18 months, I've had a lot of conversations with people who are rethinking things. You know, people are moving because they don't have to be in Chicago anymore. They can be out by the lake. People are rethinking their career. Like, because we've all been through, have you had any thoughts about that? What things are you rethinking? Like, you've been given permission to enter this conversation in a way. If you've been hesitant to do this because you're like traditionally the numbers person, now is the ultimate opportunity because everyone's talking about it.
Yeah.
So no, I think that's
I've told advisors that I've, you know, kind of consulted with and said, and you know, I'm a video guy and I realize that's not everybody's thing, but my point is, man, it's a land grab right now for attention. if you're bold enough to kind of step out there and ask some questions, granted, you're going to put yourself on the spot a little bit, but I'm like, you know, who said this? Man, I'm not going to remember the address, but I think you have to be less selfish. Like, I think that real financial advice done the right way can change family trees. Everybody deserves a family tree change, or at least an opportunity for it. And who am I to sit back and withhold that from people? Like, if there's a 50 to 150 clients that I'm called to, like, why am I not out there trying to find those people? I consider it selfish if I'm not doing that type of work out there, especially if I've been equipped to and I can. I think we need to start looking at it that way because, the type of, relief people get from stress where they can sleep at night. I mean, I don't know how many years are being added to her life. You know, I can't say all that, but the deal is her quality of life right now is improving.
Yep, I agree. I love to think like if you truly believe in the work you do, then you have a marketing becomes a sacred responsibility, right? It becomes an obligation. And so I love flipping that on its head. Like so many of us, real financial planners particularly, are like, I don't market, that's unseemly. I don't sell. And I love flipping that on its head to say like, look, if you really believe, like, cause the way I believe it is if people knew what you did, there'd be a line outside your door. The only reason there isn't is because they don't know. Whose fault is that? It's yours. So let's fix that, right? Because I get hundreds and hundreds with the work I do with the New York Times, I get hundreds and hundreds of emails from people saying, I just got one yesterday, two of them yesterday. One from a guy with, he said close to 25 million, can't find an advisor, doesn't know who to turn to. Like, and then another one from somebody with a lot less, right? That's like, Carl, the language you guys all use, I don't understand any of it. So all I'm saying is there's a line of people out there that need what you do. They are sick and they know they're sick. I don't love using that terminology, but I think the metaphor works really well. they just don't know where to find the doctor. And the only reason they don't know is because they don't believe you exist. And that's our fault as an industry.
Yeah.
But the only way to change that is to do what you're talking about. Like, look, I'm going to get out there and tell the story. I've been given permission, like no time in the history of our industry to talk about these things in a way that's meaningful. So yeah, I'd get out there, right? Like, please, for the sake of the people, get out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, dude, I can go on and on. So I'm going to circle back to compound impact versus compound interest. So we can bring this in for a landing.
Yeah. I mean, I think particularly as it relates to the work that we do and also the marketing efforts, like what I see, I just think it's so important to understand that the only shortcut is to, as soon as possible, realize there are no shortcuts.
Mm. Okay.
Like we don't, like, what do you, when you're 18 years old and somebody tells you to save $50 a month, you're like, oh, that's really going to do any good. But we all know, like, the compound interest curve is super boring at the beginning. You know, and my favorite example is always to use a penny doubled every day for 31 days. A penny doubled every day, 1 cent doubled every day for 31 days is $10.8 million, right? 31 days later. But day one penny to two to four to eight, 8 to 16, 32, 64, that's not very exciting. It takes 10 days to get above a dollar. And then by day 31, in all of our efforts, particularly around our marketing efforts, I think we need to realize the only shortcut is there's no shortcut. You can't skip the boring part of the curve. Mm. If you want to get to the steep part, we all want to get to the steep part, the part that's fun, the part where there's 45,000 people on your email list or whatever, 42,000 people on the as Twitter followers. Like, we all want to get to that spot. And we continually spend our time looking for ways to jump, shortcut the flat spot. You can't. Mm. So instead of spending time looking for those, what if you just every day decided you were going to do something that would compound, something that would keep movement in that direction? And that I think of that as compound influence or compound impact, and also trust at scale. Mm. And the way to do trust at scale is just take the stuff that's going on in your head and do it in public. And if you do it long enough, not only will you get good at it, and if you're worried about not being good at it, the good news is no one's listening to you yet. So when you're not good at it, no one's, and then when people start listening to you, you've gotten a little better, and you also realize it doesn't matter if you're not good all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes some stuff hits and sometimes it doesn't. So take the stuff going on in your head, the conversations you're having, the research you're doing, every single thing you do, and just pick one thing a day to make it public. Don't ask people to spread it.
I'm so glad you said that. I have to interrupt. I'm so glad you said that.
Yes, please.
We don't know each other, and I did not prompt you to say that. But, you know, I'm working with an advisor right now that's studying for the CFP, and we're talking about marketing. And so I'm like, okay, we got the easy way, the Staples easy button, the shortcut. Or we have something that could be a little bit more challenging to you, but I think it's going to pay dividends. And it's what we've been talking about for the last 5 minutes, which is, you know, the easy button is I can get all these emails lists and I can cold email people that don't know me, have no context. Or I can take a little bit of what the CFP board is teaching me every week, because it's way over the head of most people, and break down one of those concepts. And just go live on your Facebook page and ask people questions. See if they have any more questions based on what you're doing.
Totally.
So, no, I'm glad you said that. It's so easy.
No, it's you just have to help people understand. Like, I can't not do it anymore because it's just become habitual. And maybe that's a problem too. I don't know. But if you're studying for the CFP, why not study in public?
Wow. Okay.
Why not take your notes once a day and write up your notes and publish them? Why not go live and say, hey, here's the thing I learned today? Jump on Instagram. Like just do the work in public.
Mm.
And nobody believes it. It's too simple. It's too small. I need to go run an ad in the Super Bowl. Like, what? And I'm telling you, only one thing works. Go watch Seth Godin for a little while and you'll realize Only one thing works. Like, everybody doesn't exist anymore. The only way to find your people is to share what you're doing in public so that the type of people that you want to attract and the type of people that have the problems you want to solve will see it. They'll say, oh gosh, over time. And then what you do is you just want to increase the frequency purely by increasing your luck surface area, right? Like, just over time, you increase the frequency. This is one way I love to say it. Put yourself at risk for good things to happen. And the more you do that, the other way I like to say it is like play in traffic. And the more you play in traffic, the more likely you are to get hit.
Yeah. No, you're preaching, man. I think I've had Seth on in season one, and he's just a fountain of wisdom. He's the definite, you look up sage in the dictionary and here's his face. So, but no, I think there's so many interesting nuggets here, man. I literally can keep you all day. So this is a podcast to help empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools that I think will allow them to serve clients at the next level. And I mean, I don't think you're a better person to have this conversation with, to be honest, and to ask this question too. What word or words of wisdom would you leave with our audience?
Yeah, I think maybe sticking with the theme that we've had, look, please realize, and I think your audience, I'm hoping more than most, might be interested in doing things that are new and novel, right? Like, they might be looking at the way they were, what they thought. We all had a dream. Many of us had a dream when we got into this industry. And then it slowly crushed out of us by mentors and the, it's done this way. I would just encourage you to like go back, dig down deep, open that little time capsule and look in there a little bit. Like, what was the dream? And then realize that we need people doing it differently. Like, the way we've been doing it is not solving the problem. Therefore, it needs to be done differently. And if you have some ideas on how to do it differently, if you have a voice that has been underrepresented, if you haven't been heard, if you, all of those things, and you feel like, I can't, I'm going to sort of just beg you, please, we call it dancing with dragons. Like, just dance with that idea a bit. I'm not saying you have to do anything dramatic yet, but just, would you just next time, instead of going, jamming it down and saying, forget it, go back to doing it the way you've been told, maybe this next time, write it down on a note card. I'd really like to do I had a meeting the other day, a lunch with a young financial planner who really, really wants to start having conversations with first generation, people who are first generation, it wasn't even wealthy. It was like first generation financially secure. Like they're like first generation. And she was like, but nobody else does that. And I don't know that I'm allowed. And who am I? And da, 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 da. I was like, will you just please write that on a note card and dance with it a little bit? Like, just don't all those voices, just put it on a card. And that's what I'm begging you, your audience particularly, like, please do the thing. You know what it is. It's been bothering you for years. It's like a sliver under your finger. You're like, please just start dancing with it a bit because we need you. And then we've already talked about all the keys. Just do a little bit of it in public, a little bit more. Notice where there's tailwind. Like, you don't have to be brilliant up front. Just do enough things that you can notice where you're less wrong, right? Because we need you. That's where I'd close.
No, I love that. Less wrong. Don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. Wow.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man. This is well worth it. Well worth the wait. You're doing great things, and I will continue to cheer you from this part of the stadium. As much as I can support, I will do my best. So, Carl Richards, appreciate it, man. Have a great one.
Oh, my pleasure, Dom. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye. Hey there, I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. First, you need to write down your most important takeaway, and then you need to give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Also, remember the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please text me at 214-544-9226. I love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now, until our next conversation.